Blog Talk Radio.
Unless we come up with a better one. I love that, too. So
I thought maybe you were just dancing and got carried away. So
there might have been some of that, too. Certainly could have happened. Hey, great to be back live. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bose. Trish McFarland's with me as well. Trish, how are you tonight?
I'm good. How you been?
I've been very well, of course. I'm glad it's January. It's cold. We have snow, wind, freezing rain, all really the winter trifecta here in upstate New York today. So it's been a fantastic day. Let me just say this, Trish. Today we're recording the show live, Thursday, January 17th, 2013. This is the HR Happy Hour Show 154, titled HR and Healthcare Reform. For folks listening live, our calling number is 646-378-1086, and you can press 1 to come on the show tonight, ask a question, make a comment. We've got a great and interesting show tonight, so we definitely encourage participation from the listeners tonight, and you're absolutely welcome to call in. Of course, if you are listening and hanging out on Twitter, and there's usually some folks doing that live, our hashtag, as always, HR Happy Hour. So many thanks to our longtime show sponsor, Acquire, Acquire Software, AQUIRE.com. Always been with us forever, and many thanks to them. Big news out of Acquire and PeopleFluent as well. Trish, did you see the Lois Melbourne announcement this week?
I did not, no.
You did not?
What did
okay,
I miss?
So,
no.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll try to tell it as accurately as I can, but and she'll have to come on the show and talk about herself. Lois was promoted to vice chairman. I think they call her the vice chairman, which is odd because she's not a chairman, but regardless, vice chairman of PeopleFluent, which is the parent company of Acquire, the company that purchased Acquire last year. So it's a big promotion for Lois. Now she's an even bigger big deal in the software world. So big congratulations to former Lois. Yeah, she's awesome. Trish, you missed that, so that's like your bat.
I've been busy. I've been working. I haven't been on social media as much this week. So, yeah, I did miss it. But I'm glad to thank God we've got the show, right? So I hear it. Hear it here first. Breaking news. See, so you need like that breaking news music, you know?
Yeah. We should do a run. I know, because there's a lot of news. There's news in the HR world. There's news in the tech world. Did you see the news? And I mean, I have to talk about this because, I'm a sports guy. I have to talk about the college football player and the fake girlfriend. Did you see that story today or yesterday when it broke, Trish?
Yeah. You know what's interesting about that to me, though, is it seems like no one who, from ESPN or anybody who's been reporting on it from a sports standpoint, have they never seen the movie or the TV show on MTV Catfish? It's just that. I mean, where people, think they're in a relationship, think they're dealing with one person, and it's a complete hoax most of the time, and the person isn't either real or who they say they are or whatever. So I don't know. To me, it just sounds like a big blown up version of a catfish show to me. So
yeah, well, I had not heard that the catfish term in that context before, so that was new to me. But I agree. Sort of the mainstream sports media definitely dropped the ball. And this is the other thing I'll say is, you know, boy, it's just so much more complex now to create a fake girlfriend because. And this is sort of a maybe it's a guy thing, and maybe Trisha can't identify with this, but like back when I was, you know, in the day, you know, to create my fake girlfriend, all you really had to say was, yeah, well, she goes to another school, you know, or, you know, she's, I met her at summer camp. That was it. And you could plausibly pass off the fact that you had some fake girlfriend out there in the world that no one you knew and you sort of could ever contact or see, and you could get away with it. It was easy. Fun.
You've had fake girlfriends. That's interesting. I have not had any fake boyfriends, so
at least that
I was aware of. So.
That you remember or
that I remember, or recall, or haven't. Yeah, exactly.
Well, great, really good stuff. Well, there's other announcements. Maybe we'll get to them at the end. We got a lot of things coming up, a lot of conferences, a lot of events, a big conference that our guests are involved in in April that we'll talk about some, but. Let's get right to it. We're going to talk about HR and healthcare reform tonight. We've got two super guests waiting in the wings to come on, so let's bring them on and kick off the show. Our first guest is longtime friend of the show, returning back to the show, Jennifer Benz. Jennifer is the CEO of Benz Communications, a boutique consulting firm that focuses on benefits and strategic HR communication. She's been on the leading edge of employee benefits communication for 14 years, starting with early adopter consumer-driven health plans, and now with innovative wellness and social media strategies. Her work has been recognized by Business Insurance, the International Association of Business Communicators, Employee Benefits News, many others. She writes, she speaks, she's been in HR Magazine, HR Executive Magazine, Employee Benefit News, Conference Board Review, Workforce Management. She speaks all the time. She writes. She's great. And here's the biggest thing that I'm excited about is she's the program chair for the new HR Executive Health and Benefits Leadership Conference. First one is going to be in April 2013 in Vegas, I think April 22nd through 24th. So, Jen, let's just get her on the air and welcome her back to the show. Jennifer Benz, how are you today?
I'm very good. Thanks, Steve. And thanks, Trish. I'm glad to be on the show again. And glad to talk about healthcare reform and all the crazy things going on in our industry right now.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time, and the event you're chairing is going to be very exciting as well. And we'll talk definitely some more about that tonight. And really, really excited to have you back on the show. Thanks, Jennifer, for being with us. Our next guest is new to the show, and we're so glad to have him. His name is John Barkett. John is the Director of Health Policy Affairs for Extend Health. Before joining Extend Health, John spent 2.5 years in Washington, D.C., where he contributed to the writing, passage, and implementation of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, commonly referred to as the ACA, maybe more commonly referred to as Obamacare, the most significant piece of legislation to reform our nation's health system since Medicare was passed in 1965. Now, of course, I don't remember that passage, Trish. You know, maybe some of our listeners do, but I don't. But I heard it was a big deal. John joined the Health Subcommittee staff of the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives as a David A. Winston Health Policy Fellow in 2009, and John helped draft and negotiate the final details of legislation aimed at reducing fraud in the Medicare program while providing analysis to his colleagues. And there's a lot, John, there's too much. I can't keep going, John. There's too much more there. Let me just welcome you to the show right now until I can take a breath. John Barkett, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Steve and Trish. I padded the resume there so you wouldn't ask me about my fake girlfriend. So.
You tell you what, John's well known for girlfriends around the Twitter sphere, right, that we may or may not can vouch for. Yeah, it's fantastic. But that's a super bio. I mean, I like to read the bios of the guests when they're that impressive. So Jennifer and John combined, it's quite impressive. I have a note to myself, I've got to beef up my bio, Trish, before the next show. So
we have to work on that.
I'm having a little bio envy right now.
Bio envy.
Hey, John, I want to start with you because I know when we talked prior a month or so ago prior to getting the show set up, I just had some questions about certainly about the act and healthcare reform, but just tell us a little. I read your bio a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about Extend Health and what Extend Health does, so we get an understanding of that, of what you do and what your company does?
You got it. Yeah, Extend Health runs. We run the largest private Medicare exchange in the country. And what that means is for any employer who offers retiree health benefits to their retirees, we run a specific model for how to provide those benefits. And that model involves the employer offering a subsidy to their retirees, and those those retirees going out onto an exchange, which is just a marketplace where insurers offer individual products to retirees, and we help those retirees find their own product.
Okay, makes sense. The way you explained it, you made it sound simple, and to me, like, I had a hard time grasping it, because I think, and Jennifer, I know you might have said this in a comment or in a blog, that you thought exchange would be one of the biggest words, right, in healthcare, and talking about healthcare in 2013, and so for me, just as a sort of a layperson, just trying to understand what that means, I think is important, and hopefully we'll touch on that a little bit more throughout the show tonight.
Yep, absolutely. I do think that exchange is the word you're going to hear more about, more regards to healthcare reform and benefits this year than anything else. And it's kind of an awkward word for something that is fairly simple. It basically means there's some place to buy insurance. And, you know, maybe it's indicative of just kind of the problems in our system that we have to come up with a fancy word just to call the place or the existence of a viable means of buying insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I thought we'd start with tonight, and Trish, too, it's great to have your perspective as the head of HR, right, at a big company, too, right? So you're someone in your real world, in the real day job that you have, will be also having to wrestle and grapple with these kind of issues tonight, too. So, you know, as questions come up that make sense to you, just, yeah, definitely, you know, help us out. Because I may not have the insight you have, because you know my job's not running HR for a big powerful company like yourself. So okay, you have to cover me on that. Okay.
Yeah, I'll just tell you that my whole team is really excited about the show tonight and our guests because there are so many questions that they have and that I've had. Even in the last year, kind of starting to prepare. So it'll be a good resource, hopefully, for many practitioners.
Yeah. So let's kick it off. The first set of topics I thought we'd try to cover tonight is just a little bit of background and an overview of healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act. You know, and I guess, John, I'll throw this to you first, just in a nutshell. I know and this is maybe not a fair question, but I just wanted to start off, we've got like about 45 minutes to go on the show, right? And so if you had 45 minutes to sort of help us understand a little bit more about healthcare reform and the Affordable Care Act, what are some of the things HR professionals need to understand fundamentally, 2-3 things that they really need to know right now about the changes that are starting as a result of healthcare reform?
Well, I think the first thing to really understand here is that the healthcare reform, for most employers, is not requiring them to fundamentally shift the way that they currently provide healthcare benefits to their workers. I think that's people wonder, well, they're making all these changes. How much is it going to affect me? I think if you currently today are offering benefits to your workers that you yourself would provide to yourself, then you're probably okay with any of the new penalties or requirements that are coming along.
Okay.
And then I would just say, it does depend on what type of employer you are. I think if you are offering, a decent benefit right now to your workers, you're probably in the clear. If you're not offering, relatively generous benefits and you have over 50 FTEs, then you're going to have a decision coming up pretty soon here.
And that demarcation, that 50 full-time equivalent cutoff, is that the only threshold in the law, John? Is it just under that or over that and that's it? There's no tiering beyond that?
For the purposes of the employer share responsibility penalties, these are so-called pay or play provision, that's
right.
The key one that matters. Yeah, if you're less than 50, you have no obligation, no penalty if you don't provide benefits to your workers. If you're over 50 FTEs, and here FTEs is defined as employee working more than 30 hours a week, then you either have to provide them with an offer of sort of a minimum coverage or you have to pay a penalty.
Right. And so in organizations, obviously the first thing you'd be addressing is, well, am I under or over that threshold, which is a fairly I'd imagine, to be a fairly easy thing for most organizations to do, unless they're skirting right on that line and trying to count FTEs very finely, right? That's a pretty obvious kind of difference.
That's right. There are lots of corner cases, though. December 28th, the Feds put out a rule that answered a bunch, or that tried to address a lot of the questions around this topic. And those questions were things like, well, what if I have part-time workers or seasonal workers? Or my industry is an industry where, you know, people work different shifts, and if you had to add it all up, it might be different times throughout the year. Those types of cases are where it gets tricky.
Right. Yeah, and right, Trish, I mean, you've probably been in places like this. Places like to define FTEs differently. If there's not sort of a generally accepted standard for it anyway, right? I mean,
right.
I don't think there is. Yeah. I think, that's kind of – so, John, we talk about the requirement then. So we sort of say, okay, you've got over 50 FTEs, say, in that case, which is probably most of the people who are listening to the show tonight, working organizations of that size. Then we get into that sort of, if you're already providing benefits and providing good coverage, you probably don't have to worry or do anything. Is there a definitional standard, or does it vary from, you know, regionally or state to state, of what that threshold is? Like, how does one determine if they're offering adequate enough benefits according to the provisions of the law?
They will be able to do it using several methods. The Feds are going to put out a calculator, which would allow an employer to go in and say, well, my plan has this deductible and this set of co-insurances and co-payments, and the calculator will spit back and say, yes, this is generous enough coverage. They're going to put out a sort of a minimum and say, as long as your deductible is below this and your co-insurance is below that, then that's also okay. And they're also going to give employers an option. At least they've proposed all these things. They're also proposing to give employers an option to sort of send their plan design to an actuary, and if the actuary says, yes, this is generous enough, then it'll also be okay. The truth is that, again, if you're an employer who currently is offering a benefit that you yourself would be happy with, you're probably in the clear.
Yeah, and so maybe that leads me into, because you mentioned that, John, a couple of times, and it's sort of resonating to me, and it's sort of taking me to one of the next questions we thought we'd talk about in the first part of the show, was misconceptions of healthcare reform. Now, obviously, this is sort of an opinion thing, but I guess if you read enough, mainstream media and political coverage, depending on your perspective, certainly, I guess, but sometimes it feels like, wow, this is sweeping major change, and there's a lot of, fuss and bother. And even today, we saw a CEO from a huge company, Whole Foods, talking, having to retract a comment he made likening healthcare reform to fascism, right? So I guess it feels like this is a bigger deal than maybe, at least so far, we're talking about it seems to be for many organizations. Am I sort of reading this correctly on that?
I think that's my opinion. There are there's some new reporting requirements that insurers have to comply with. There's a couple of new taxes that are going to hit. They're spread across lots of different populations, but they're going to hit employers in certain places. But it's, they're not trivial, but they're not, game changing. Those types of little things around the edges. I think for the most part, I think the biggest misconception across employers is that, somehow they have to totally, revolutionize what they're doing right now with their benefit strategy. I think for the most part, that's not the case,
Right.
Chris, Jennifer, happy to hear you. This is my perspective from having, been.
Yeah, I love Jennifer, your take on it. You're obviously working with organizations and how they approach these changes and how they work with their employees on communicating these changes. So you have a take on this, whether or not these changes will represent just really major disruptive change for many organizations, or is it just a way to try to fill in the gaps maybe of folks who maybe had difficulty getting access to insurance in the past?
Well, I do think that there's the potential for bigger changes down the road, but at least in the short term, for most large employers
you know, they're going to continue with their current strategy, and they're particularly the companies we work with who are investing in healthcare, investing in communication, investing in wellness programs, and, you know, really trying to do the right thing for their employees. It's not, you know, radical change. Now that said, you know, some of the things that seem like little requirements, like some of the notifications and the additional documentation and reporting for every large employer in the country to have to do those things, that is quite a burden. And
right.
You see things like, you know, the summary of benefits coverage is this new documentation requirement. Well, for our clients and the ones who are already doing a good job communicating what their plans are all about, there's no need for that. And it's redundant, and it's, you know, it's not a good use of time and money. But for a lot of people, that's going to be useful because they don't have any good way to compare one plan to another, or to compare their coverage to what their spouse might have available. So it kind of depends on your perspective, you know, which component seems like a bigger deal than another.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry, I didn't interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, no worries. I would say, too, though, it is fascinating to me, the media coverage on things. And, you know, even in, you know, the supposedly more liberal media channels, you see a lot of benefit designs and a lot of things that are being attributed to healthcare reform, like high deductible health plans and consumer driven plans, aggressive wellness strategies, cost shifting to employees, you know, playing tricks with your benefit design so that fewer employees qualify for full benefits. All of those things have existed way before healthcare reform passed.
But you see this
stuff in the media kind of attributing it to healthcare reform, and that's just not accurate.
Yeah, you know, Jen, the thing, and John as well, the one thing I'd like to bring up, so we sort of talked in and around how it may or may not represent significant change for many employers depending on their size, the level of benefits they're offering, the design of their plans, and so on and so forth. But we definitely have comments just even in this small sample size on the back channel of folks listening tonight who are HR professionals, say, who have multi-location retail establishments or lots of part-time workers. And, you know, I definitely see some comments already coming in like, hey, this is a big deal for us. You know, there's,
mm-hmm.
you know, particularly in those areas. And I guess that's where we've seen the most or the most pointed criticism, certainly, right? And we've seen that both, I see it individually from friends of ours on the back channel tonight, as well as, you know, the Papa John's and I think Wendy's and some other, you know, casual dining, fast casual or fast food kinds of places. So, you know, John, I guess is that fair to say, right? Those industries or industries that are really in heavily into that sort of part-time workforce are really going to be impacted more significantly.
Absolutely. I didn't mean to downplay it, and I'm sort of preparing. I wanted to make sure that we highlighted you could sort of group folks into, you know, four different types. Do they offer lower, more generous or less generous benefits, and do they have a few number of workers or a lot of number of workers? And anybody in the high number of workers but, you know, modest generosity of benefits is going to have to – they're going to have to decide, you know, to look at these pay-or-play provision and do a lot of, you know, do some analysis, talk to your consultant or your broker, think through workforce scheduling, that kind of stuff. You know, lots of large employers are doing it. The folks who have come out and tested the waters so far, it seems like they've gotten some mixed results. I think it was Darden Restaurants who said they were going to pilot a program that would reduce hours in some of their stores, and they, I think, have shelved it and said, we're going to continue offering coverage. So, no, it's a lot of planning is going into this right now, especially if you're in that sort of, in the retail, hospitality industry, those types of industries.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and Trish, you're running HR for more of a professional services type of organization, probably not running into, I mean, if I'm diagnosing your situation, you don't probably have scores of these kind of temporary or part-time workers, right?
No, I mean, for us, it's I guess the plan, you know, is pretty much status quo. So until we wait and hear more, but
mm-hmm.
not in all-out panic mode by any means.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's status quo for a lot of companies who, you know, as John said, they're offering good benefits now. They're not going to have to make fundamental changes in the next couple of years. But if we look down the road, you know, one of the key reasons that employer-sponsored healthcare coverage is so important is because you can't get good coverage elsewhere. And, you know, I know that personally from having to get individual coverage when I left my old big employer. And, you know, that change in the marketplace, which will be in place soon, and the ability for anyone to get decent health insurance, not have to be tied to an employer, that does have the potential to make big, big shifts down the road. And that's where we're starting to hear so much about the exchanges, both the public exchanges that are being developed now and the private exchanges like Extend Health and others that, you know, provide more mechanisms for making that insurance selection process and the ability for employers to help pay for that coverage easier. So, you know, a few more years down the road, and we might be having a totally different conversation.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right, Jen. I think that's one of the frustrations, right? That companies are expressing and HR folks might be expressing too. It feels like it's a moving target a little bit, maybe, right? And I don't know if that's a fair characterization or not, but it almost kind of does. And like I think one of the real reason I wanted to do this particular type of a show was back in November. I was at a local HR event in Virginia, and someone did a presentation. You know, a benefits consultant type person did a presentation about healthcare reform and its impact on organizations, and she spent an hour with, you know, lots of detailed charts and Excel worksheets and calculations and sort of trying to, you know, help people figure out, like, well, if you have this many employees and this many your participation rate is X and your cost is Y, then your answer might be Z. And it was just this morass of numbers and figures, and I sat there, you know, for an hour, and I think I know what's going on a little bit, and I left there even more confused than I was going in. I had no idea what I would do if I guess maybe that was her point. I left. I would have to call her for help and hire her. Maybe that was the game. But
I definitely think the actuaries and the health plan consultants are you know, definitely have their work cut out for them, and they're becoming even more essential than they were before.
Yeah, I think so. Let me do a quick reset and pause. This is the HR Happy Hour show. We're talking HR and healthcare reform. My name's Steve Bose. Trisha McFarlane, of course, is here with us. Our guests tonight are Jennifer Benz from Benz Communications and John Barkey from Extend Health, who also helped draft parts of Healthcare Reform Act that we were talking about tonight. So, and again, such a huge subject, and I know we're not going to hit every single area of it, and definitely before the end of the show, we're going to try to give folks who are listening tonight, you know, direction into additional information and resources and into some advice as to how to proceed forward. And another area, Jen, I wanted to cover, and John tonight as well, relating to healthcare reform, isn't around communications and around how to talk to your employees and what messaging you want to give to employees. We touched on it briefly, but like, I guess the way I wanted to phrase it is if you know, Trish, who's the head of HR at her company, you know, needs to know, you know, what do I need to be telling my employees now? What should I be thinking about? And what do I need to be telling them about healthcare reform? Is there a sort of a primer, Jen, or a sort of checklist that she needs to go through in order to start thinking about what she's going to be telling her company and her employees?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will just do a blatant promotion for my own blog right now, because
okay,
we have tons of this content outlined on our blog. We've given templated language for some of these pieces and are, you know, always posting, you know, some of the key topics. So before I get into the details, let me say what employers don't need to be saying right now. And that is that employers don't need to try to predict the future. You know, we work with some of our clients who are saying, you know, we have to tell people what's going to happen in 2018 and, you know, that we need to plan for that. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in 2018, and you don't need to worry your employees about the possibilities down the road. So
okay,
you need to keep communication focused on what's relevant right now. And so what's relevant right at this very moment for most people is that they're going to get their W-2 in the mail, and it's going to have the value of their health coverage for last year on it. The new a new piece of information that's required on that W-2, and there are loads of internet rumors about how that is taxed now, and it's not. It's purely informational. So that's, you know, a very tactical piece that employers need to communicate right now. And then, you know, employers need to be putting in the channels to do ongoing communication. The typical way of communicating benefits is just to pile all of the information on during annual enrollment, and that doesn't work with keeping up with the complexities and the confusion around healthcare reform, and it definitely doesn't work with needing to move people into high-deductible health plans and help them learn more about consumerism and get them participating in wellness programs and so forth. So what we tell companies is, you know, this is the year you need to get the communications infrastructure in place and start talking about benefits year-round if you're not already doing that.
Right.
Jen,
right.
I'm just curious, do you see the companies that you deal with actually really focusing on benefit communication year-round, or do you think that a majority probably only address it as it comes into, like, open enrollment periods and things like that? Will this be a big change for them to start communicating more, do you think?
Well, the companies that we work with, and, you know, we work with very large employers who, you know, wouldn't be working with us if they didn't want to make a big investment in their benefits communication. And so we have really shifted almost all of our clients and these companies to truly communicating year-round. And it makes a huge, huge difference in the effectiveness and what you can do and how people appreciate and use the programs. But we did a survey last year, and it's a very small number of employers who actually do communicate year-round. The vast majority send things out one time a year during annual enrollment, or maybe twice a year, you know, if there's a big change. And there's a big disconnect because in that same survey, we asked about 300 companies, you know, what are your biggest goals, what are your biggest challenges, and they want people engaged and using the benefits properly year-round. And that, you know, those are things they're challenged with, and then they're only communicating twice a year. So there's a big disconnect in terms of what companies need from their benefit strategy and the ways they're actually communicating and getting the information out to their employees and their family members.
Right.
Yeah, and so, Jen, your blog, absolutely, and your company's resources are excellent resource. Are there other resources? Maybe John is aware of these too, either in the private market or via, you know, from governmental agencies and such about this, like, you know, if you're worried about compliance, you're worried about communication compliance and things like that, are there other guides? Like, you know, I guess I feel like a little frustrated, and I think there's definitely some sniping on the back channel tonight that, you know, oh, this is so complex, there's more bureaucracy, there's more, you know, more stuff I've got to comply with that I won't, you know, don't know how to do. Is there some... anything we can tell the audience that makes that will, that sort of will help them think, hey, this is, you know, without sort of downplaying the significance of the changes, but that they're manageable and there's plenty of opportunity to learn what to do.
John, do you want to start with that one?
Well, I mean, this might be the sort of typical answer you'd expect from the guy who now is works for a Towers Watson company, but I think, you know, there are experts on this stuff, right? And and specifically on the employer responsibilities there, your broker, your consultant are doing this for lots of clients. I think that's the place to go. I would not recommend going to the Department of Labor website and reading the regulations that they're putting out because that's how I fall asleep every night.
yeah, right. I guess that's what I was getting at, right? And you're saying basically, no, don't go there. And that's probably good advice, right? Yeah.
I think it doesn't make a lot of sense for, you know, folks who are managing their companies, you know, wearing all sorts of hats within the HR realm with their company to go out and try to wear this hat as well. It's a different language reading the legalese, the regs. And so I think, you know, ideally you have somebody whom you're working with on this technical stuff who have made presentations like this in the past and are working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and I would echo that. You know, don't try to figure this out on your own. Companies need good consultants and good resources to sort through this all. It is complex. I would say, though, that one great kind of impartial resource is the Kaiser Family Foundation. And we have them listed on our website. We link out to them a lot. They have great information about what the changes mean, how to understand them, and they also have just a tremendous amount of data and research about what's actually going on. And they are updating things very frequently. So that's the Kaiser Family Foundation, not to be confused with Kaiser Permanente, the health plan, which is totally separate.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's great, Jen. Thanks for that. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, like any other kind of change, right, that is going to happen in an organization, it just, the initial reaction often can be, oh, this is bad, this is scary, this doesn't make sense, this is somehow, you know, going to be harmful to my process. It's going to throw, like I recall, like when I was working in a job when finance and accounting kind of job when Sarbanes-Oxley first hit, right? And that was, it was like, it reminds me of that a little bit. And that's such a, maybe that's an unfair comparison because, you know, we're hopeful, or at least most people are hopeful that the outcomes and the results of healthcare reform are going to be really positive for most people. And Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, was just seemed like an extraordinary regulatory and administrative burden put on companies. But I kind of, I don't know, Trish, I don't know what you think. You come from a finance background as well. There's, like, I almost feel like there's some sentiment out there like that, and that's one of the reasons why folks are getting a little riled up too.
You know, I see your point because definitely working in Big Four public accounting when that Sarbanes-Oxley came out, it was certainly something we were extremely focused on and trained and tested on. But I think, too, being a little bit further along in my career where something like healthcare reform now, as a leader, I'm much more informed because I'm the person dealing with our broker. I'm the person dealing with the communications. So, I mean, just kind of sitting here listening and thinking it all through, I'm thinking I probably need to do a better job as an HR leader sharing that with everyone on my team. Maybe
right.
Not just the people who, you know, handle benefits with me on the team, but really the entire team, because I'm just thinking maybe that's where some of that confusion and some of the anxiety is coming in. You might work in human resources but not be someone who's really close to the benefits decisions, and you think it might be a bigger deal than what it is. Because I think it's comforting to listen to this show and hear that, you know, most employers are probably doing already what they need to be doing. So that's probably a big message that I know I have not seen or heard elsewhere until tonight from
Jen and John. I don't want to minimize the impact either, and I know John doesn't or Jennifer doesn't either. You know,
right.
I know some folks who are listening tonight have made some, you know, comments like, hey, this is a big deal for us, for our industry, and we know that it is. It's, and I think it's that in combination with this, those few really loud voices that we've seen in the news, like I said earlier, right, with the Papa John's guy, the Darden restaurants guy, and so on and so forth. I mean, those have gotten a lot of run and a lot of play, which therefore kind of can feed into this overall, oh, this is, you know, forgetting the politics of it all and just the national debate in and around, you know, what's this going to pass, should it remain the law, and all this, forgetting all that for the moment, or maybe forever. I didn't want to talk about the politics of this really tonight because I don't really feel like that's sort of the point, right? I mean, now we're sort of dealing with the law as it stands and the changes that are going to need to be implemented, and debating whether or not those are right or wrong probably doesn't make a lot of sense, I think, for the average HR professional who's got to, you know, take care of this in their organization. But, I want to feel better about this. You know, I want people... You know, I want people to get to the end of the hour and say, yeah, I'm energized. I'm excited about healthcare reform. I'm not sure we're getting there yet, though. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, I would just add, Steve, you know, part of the dialogue on healthcare reform makes it sound like our system as it exists today works. And we have to remember, you know, healthcare reform is not perfect. Like, this legislation is not perfect. And if I, you know, if it was my way, there are plenty of things that I would have done differently. But our system is fundamentally broken in so many ways. And so why are we trying to protect a system that really doesn't work for anybody? You know, it needs major, major overhauls. And this is probably just, you know, the first step in, you know, a long series of big, big changes. And I think, you know, HR leaders can be excited about that because we really have such an opportunity in HR to use healthcare like as something that's so valuable for our organizations, makes such a huge impact on the organization when people are healthy and they show up at work every day and they can do their work and they can be present. And it also makes such a huge impact on our country overall. Employers are in such a unique position to really impact people's own health and use all the levers and all the tools that they can do that. And that's what we should be focusing on, not worrying about, you know, the administration and complaining about having to change things when benefits in HR is always changing all the time.
Yeah, Jen, those are great points. And I agree with you on that. I mean, I do think it's a differentiator. I think it can be when done well. I mean, I think, and Trish, you know, you can chime in as the head of HR at a big company yourself. I mean, the importance or the value or even the competitive advantage of having, you know, whether it's a cost perspective or just healthier employees show up more, are more productive, are happier, and get better outcomes for the organization. I know that's sometimes hard to prove, right, with mathematics, but, I mean, you've got to at least feel that that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And Trish, I don't want to jump in ahead of you, but I don't even think it's hard to prove with mathematics. You know, like there's plenty of research out there
right. That
connects, you know, healthy employees to more productive employees to better company results. You know, there's great research out there about the ROI on wellness programs. You know, it's a lot of this is common sense, yet we still waste all this time debating whether or not it makes sense to invest in employee health. So let's just stop that debate and focus on what actually we can do to make an impact. And there's so much that most companies and there's so much that's very easy that most companies aren't doing yet.
Yeah, fair point. Let me do a quick pause and catch our breath, and then I want to sort of touch on one of the comments, Jen, you made in the last segment, and then we'll throw it over to John for some observations. But this is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bose. Trish McFarland's with me. Of course, we're talking HR and healthcare reform. Our guests tonight are Jennifer Benz from Benz Communications, John Barkey from Extend Health. We're kicking around healthcare reform, trying to rally the troops, Jen and John and Trish, trying to make them to leave in the last 15 minutes of the show. We're going to send them off, marching forward, you know, proudly with their heads held high, ready to slay the healthcare reform dragons in their organizations. And I'm not going to let people – I don't have to play some goofy song at the end of the show. People are going to leave the show feeling good. That's my goal. But, Jen, you made an observation in one of your last comments about, hey, this is not really the end. This is kind of the beginning. This is the first step or the first series of steps in what, you know, we think probably will be some long-term and more – I don't know, fundamental changes in healthcare and delivery of healthcare in the U.S. So the last section of the show we thought we'd try to touch on, you know, maybe get a little more speculative, and I'll throw this to you, John, especially with your background as one of the architects and the players in forming the current set of laws, is what the future might hold. Is the medium and longer-term implications of healthcare reform, are there some things that maybe that you know or you think are might be coming or was at least maybe things you considered including and didn't for whatever reason in this first go-round and might come later on. I'd love for you to just comment a little bit about looking forward in the next few years in around healthcare reform. Did we lose John? Hello? Okay, we've gone dead. All right, hang on, everyone. I don't know if folks can still hear me. Give me a tweet or something. I think we've solved the audio. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me, guys? Hello? Anyone there? Hello? Hello? All right, looks like only folks who can only hear me right now, apologize for that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to disconnect all the guests, John, Jen, and Trish. I'm going to drop all you guys. If you guys want to try to call back in, that might work. Apparently having a couple of problems with our switchboard tonight. So we'll give that a shot, and we'll see what happens. And hopefully we can get back on board. But at any rate, and folks who are hearing this can still hear me now. I apologize for the technical problems tonight. While I've been doing the show 3.5 years, we've probably had problems like this 3 or 4 times. Trish, can you hear me? Are you there? Nope, can't hear me. We've probably had problems like this 3 or 4 times, and it's been a while. So Trish, John, Jennifer, drop back in if you can. If you get this, I'll hang out for a couple more minutes to see if anybody rings back up. Otherwise, it's just me. I have a couple of announcements to make while we're waiting for any of the guests to come back up. Might as well get that out of the way. In early February, February 6th, I'll be doing a podcast with our friends from SAP, an SAP radio podcast around analytics and workforce stuff, and that should be kind of fun. Some folks from SAP and Mercer and a couple of other organizations getting together to talk about analytics, which should be a fun show, and we'll try to make it kind of lively. In March, heading out to Vegas for an Ultimate Software event, which should be kind of fun. And then in April, of course, the Benefits Conference, which I wanted to talk to Jen and John about before the end of the show. But Jen is running the Benefits Conference, the first annual Benefits Conference, from April 22nd to 24th. And you can check out more information about that at benefitsconf.com. So benefitsconf.com. So, yeah, so it looks like here's what we're going to do. It looks like since we've lost all the lines, and I apologize for that, what we'll probably do is drop it off. We'll do some follow-ups, and we'll tweet out some final links and things that we wanted to have folks have access to. And then we'll just wrap up here. So I'm gonna wrap up the episode now, and I apologize for the technical problems. And I think at some later date we'll try to get folks rescheduled as well. So anyway, thanks so much. I apologize for all the issues. We'll end here, and we'll jump on the back channel on Twitter and chat for a few minutes there. So thanks everyone. Bye bye.